Earlier this month, I read an article on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's news that broke my heart. And I'm going to give you a bit of content warning here. It seems that as a woman was sleeping on a sidewalk out in front of the Queen Elizabeth Theater, when a man set her on fire. A man set a homeless woman on fire as she lay sleeping. And I found myself remembering my days as a student at Vancouver School of Theology and my time there with that article. And I'll tell you, it's an interesting experience being the only Unitarian Universalist attending a liberal Christian theological school. I found it beneficial to take the time to define the terms that we used in classes so that we could find commonality. And the Reverend Brian Kiley once said that when talking about Unitarian Universalism, there needs to be a required descriptive paragraph or two that defines the language we use before we even begin to get to the heart of the matter. And that piece of advice was helpful in helping me to begin to use the word God much more comfortably when I found myself as the minority in the room, a non-Christian, pagan, Unitarian Universalist. The basis of my sermon with you this morning comes from my field placement work at First United Mission on the corner of Gore and Hastings in Vancouver. And the goal of our field placement work was to discern where we found the face of God. And I translated this requirement into how I found the divine or the sacred or even the highest part of the capital S in self. The parts of the self that reflect the highest parts of our being. So when I use the word God in my reflections with you this morning, know that I'm doing so out of respect to the people and their work at First United Mission, as that is how they view the work that they are doing. That God is very much alive and present within the structure known as First United Mission. First Church has always served those in need. During the Depression of the 1930s, soup lines surrounded the building. Small businesses were created, and people were employed by First Church Welfare Industries, which rebuilt small appliances and repaired furniture. And throughout its history, social workers, prison visitors, and ethnic ministries from First United had been active in the community and were instrumental in birthing many of the community organizations, which included the Dugout Day Center, the Downtown Community Health Society, and the Downtown Eastside Residents Association. And in recent years, as the Downtown Eastside has continued to be the home for the most marginalized members of society, the outreach work at First has tried to keep pace with the growing demands to walk with those struggling with issues of addictions, mental illness, homelessness, and poverty. Close to 15 years ago, they started on a new path of opening the congregational doors to include everyone who walked through their doors. They folded their traditional congregation and they broadened that definition to include every resident of the downtown east side of Vancouver. So sanctuary took on a new meaning. Instead of the place where Sunday morning service happens, sanctuary is now sanctuary from the elements. Spending time at First United was a growing experience for me. And from what I saw during my time there, I can truly say that God is alive and active there. I found myself continually humbled by the work that they are doing on a constant day-to-day basis. And I gained a new perspective on just how important it is to go to the people where they are at with compassion and understanding. At any given time, when you walk through the doors at First United Mission, you're greeted with a warm smile by the staff who are constantly walking around and present for anyone there. As you walk around, you'll find people sleeping in the hallways. First United Mission is a home to them. They can keep their possessions there. They get their mail there. Taxes and advocacy work is done through their offices. Meals provided 3 times a day, 7 days a week. Toiletries provided with a smile by the office staff. So you get a real sense of the need for them to exist. The staff are constantly in demand by one person or another, and they feel called to help community ways members in a variety of ways that many would feel is far beyond their job description, and they do so with a smile. I started attending the Wednesday night dinner celebrations, and those celebration dinners were a way that the community gathered to celebrate. I arrive around 4:30 in the afternoon. The place is empty. It is right in the middle of the time when for 1 hour a day, the building is cleared and the place is clean from top to bottom. Staff monitor the doors to make sure only volunteers enter, and we have time to set the room up for dinner. We use real tablecloths. We use real cutlery put on the table alongside plates. Coffee and tea are made. Ernie and his army of volunteers are in the kitchen busy making a special meal for everyone. And you can find anywhere from 5 to 10 volunteers that show up to help. Some of us are regulars, greeting each other by name. And then the doors open at about 5:45 and the people begin to walk in. Some with assistance, some rushing to get their favorite seats against the wall. And Marilyn's there, sitting at the front, playing her guitar as people enter. She's there every week, creating a peaceful atmosphere with her music. And we begin to fan out, offering coffee and tea to everyone. No lineups, just service with a smile. And after Rick, the minister, spends some time introducing the theme for the evening, we serve dinner to everyone with plated food. And then after dinner, Rick spends a bit more time on the theme. And what strikes me is that there's very little talk of God or the scriptures. It's a message of hope that is given, while at the same time recognizing the stark reality of life in the downtown East Side. At a time when the world is receiving a wake-up call to the environment and economic crises, folks at First United Mission are working at a grassroots level with the approach and belief that all people will finally be saved or brought back into holiness with God. This is a place of the last open door for many people residing in the downtown East Side. The work being done in this place respects the inherent worth and dignity of each and every person. Every person is greeted with a smile, and all are helped to feel welcome. And isn't that our first Unitarian Universalist principle, treating each person with inherent worth and dignity? As First United Mission is seeking to find a third way of living God's work, the story of John Murray comes into my mind. John Murray, the person who brought universalism to North America and our universalist miracle. In the East Coast of the United States is rocky and cold, the air heavy with the smell of the ocean salt. And just outside of New York, there's a small harbor called Lanoka Harbor. And it was Thomas Potter's love of theology that brought him to the idea of universalism. And he loved the idea that all humans would ultimately be saved and was eager to hear more about this concept. You heard that he built a meeting house for the purpose of housing a preacher of the universal gospel. Well, belief in universal salvation was banned as early as 543 by Justinian, the emperor of the Eastern Roman Empire. The theology weaved its way into the thinking of the day in the 1700s by the church in London. It was thought that universal salvation flowed like a stream, sometimes above the ground, able to be seen, but most of the time deep underground. And it was because John Murray began to share these thoughts that he lost his preaching position in the Methodist Church. And thereafter, he lost both his infant son and his beloved wife and put into debtor's prison. I'm not sure what was going on for John Murray as he sat there in debtor's prison. From all accounts that I've read, he'd given up on life and was waiting to die. Now, you need to understand that during Europe's Middle Ages, debtors, both men and women, were locked up together in a single large cell until their families paid their debt. Debt prisoners often died of disease contracted from other debt prisoners. Conditions included starvation and abuse from other prisoners. Unable to pay the debt, people often remained in debt prisons for many years. And some were released to become serfs or indentured servants until they paid off their debt in labor. It was through the grace of his brother-in-law that Murray was freed. Downcast and distressed, he was determined to give up religion altogether and make a new life for himself in America. And you've heard how they ended up stuck on the wrong side of the sandbar, how he was convinced to stay with a smaller boat, and how he went in search of provisions being directed to the home of Thomas Potter. And if you remember, when asked to preach on the following Sunday, Thomas Potter responded, the wind will never change, sir, until you have delivered to us in that meeting house a message from God. We've certainly come a long way since the time of debtor prisons. There are no more barbaric punishments, no more debt prisons, no more. Or have we? I wonder if debt prisons still exist. Not the kind behind guards and barbed wire fences, but the kind that imprison our hearts, our minds, our souls. How many people are living in a prison in their own mind? Life circumstances conspire together to bring about a downward spiral into depression, addiction, mental illness, and homelessness. Vancouver and the West Coast in general is a place where people travel to look for work. Some end up on the streets not having found it. It's also a place that's warm enough to live on the streets year round. Governmental policies have increasingly relied on agencies to provide services to the addicted, the homeless, the mentally ill, that result in a lack of a coordinated effort. And many of us find ourselves in prisons of our own making at different times in life, boxed in with a set of beliefs that cannot, or rather must not, ever change. And that prison has been constructed because it served us well at some point in our life. But we've become so entrenched in that way of being that we can't see it anymore. We've lost touch with the neighborhood around us. Sometimes it takes us a while to see it. Sometimes we don't ever see it. And we can begin to see it through growing awareness. A growing awareness that the prisons of our mind are our own filters or walls that keep us blind to the needs of those around us and the good that is inside of each one of us. Carly is one who lives this out on a daily basis. As she sits and chats gently with one person, she's carefully watching one woman who's finally fallen asleep after coming down off heroin. The woman appeared at 5 in the morning, high and soaked to the bone. Carly quietly took her into the shower, helped her to warm up, all the while watching her carefully for signs of overdose. Several hours later, Carly kept calming her down as she woke up full of panic, which happened about every 20 minutes or so. Dorothy Sole writes, "Perhaps those who know about the hunger for God among us best are those who have dropped through the usual safety nets. The addicts see more clearly than the fit. It is through this hunger that we begin to see that we need to be intimately connected with the world around us, because the sacred is present in all that is. God is present through the caring for someone coming down off heroin throughout the day, sitting and having dinner conversation with someone who's been invisible to most people all day long, allowing people to find sanctuary from the elements and have a warm, dry place to sleep. God shows herself in those sudden moments when the addiction or the mental illness drops away just for an instant. And this precious spirit rises and reminds us that we are all human. Like Murray Grove, First United Mission sits near the harbor with salt in the air, but that's not the only thing in the air at First United Mission. In addition to the unique smells that live there, there's the smell of new possibility of how we can be present for each other. They are poised at the corner of Hastings and Gore, looking out at a new way of living church. This community has been active, holding the space for a new way to come, just as Thomas Potter did. I'm glad to see the very fundamental belief that each and every person has weaved its way through the belief systems of so many faith denominations now. The 17th century responded to the broken and homeless by casting them off, keeping them separate. Debtor's prison was a place where disease was readily spread. The downtown East Side has a 40% prevalence of AIDS among its residents, more than the rate of AIDS in Botswana. Have we done any better? Are we more equipped to deal with what's outside the prison walls we have constructed for ourselves in our minds to keep us safe? How much more willing are we to see the needs of those around us with compassion, with caring, with understanding? Through doing this work, I've had to ask myself some tough questions that still take me time to come up with an answer, because I feel like I'm only starting to scratch the surface. I can't help but wonder how I have broken through the prison walls of my own mind. How have I created the space in my own life to cater to the least among us in whatever environment I find myself in? And I can't help but take my wondering even broader into our Unitarian Universalist faith. In what ways do we, as a faith tradition, continue to live out this first principle? What is etched on our prison walls that keep our beliefs walled in? Our first principle has us covenanting and affirming the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Every time we invoke this principle to support our actions and belief, has us living this out. When I had the privilege of going to Murray Grove, I saw these words that John Murray wrote engraved on a plaque in the 1770s. That plaque still hangs above the fireplace of the retreat center dedicated to his work. They are my beacon as I discern my way into the world. May they be a beacon for all who come to First United Mission in searching for a way out of their debtor's prison. You may possess only a small light, but uncover it. Let it shine. Use it in order to bring more light and understanding to the hearts and minds of people. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. May it be so.